Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing Innovation, designed by Carl Chudiak, developed by Chris Cieslik. Both of them are of Red 7?
Yeah, I think I've heard of it. I don't know much about it, though.
I have not heard of any of the games. The artist is Alana Servanek, also of the same games. And graphic design is by Kara Judd. And it is published by Asmodee Games. The description is, Innovation is a game of civilization building through technologies, ideas, and ingenuity. Starting in the Stone Age, you will choose the innovations that define your people's destiny through history, from humble beginnings of the wheel and clothing to gunpowder, democracy, and combustion, all the way to satellites and the internet. Each of these will give your civilization a specific ability. Some will allow you to advance through the ages faster, others will help you build your infrastructure, and yet more will give you the ability to attack your rivals. The mechanics are hand management, melding and splaying.
Yep.
You made that one up.
Nope.
And variable phase order.
And I put the definition from Board Game Geek of melding and splaying. Because when I read that, I was like, what the hell is that?
Melding and splaying. A set of cards in a specific relationship to one another that allows them to be played across a table or scored is a meld. When laying these cards down, the way the cards splay or overlap one another may sometimes reveal or conceal certain abilities or attributes. Examples. Two games I have played Circle the Wagons.
Yeah, and yeah. Sprawlopolis, Kiwi and I played, and okay. Now I understand it. Because I think that one really kind of allowed you to conceal certain features when you overlapped the cards. You were building like a city, basically, Sprawlopolis. Okay. And yeah,
Circle the Wagons and Sprawlopolis have very similar like play to them, okay. But they're doing different things.
Gotcha. All right, and then the box art is...
Wait, you said you were going to go back to this, the humble beginnings.
Oh, I was going to do the box art, and then... Okay, so okay. I was just going to go back to the fact that it was like, from the humble beginnings of the wheel and clothing to gunpowder democracy, which was way earlier than gunpowder and combustion.
It's true. True.
That's why it threw me off. I was like, democracy is pretty, you know, I think of that as ancient, but... Mm-hmm. Okay. So the box is like a checkerboard with a little... lamp post next to I'm gonna say the Parthenon.
Yeah, that's what I would say too, especially thinking democracy. But
so based on all this, would you pull it off a shelf?
I mean, when I first started reading the description, I was like, oh, I'm so excited. Innovations, like, this sounds exciting. Looking at the box art, which is very plain. I mean, it's like tan and lighter tan checkerboard. Probably not. And like, again, like Circle the Wagons and Sprawlopolis are not two of my favorite games either. So probably not. But I'm excited to see. Maybe I'll be proven wrong.
Yeah,
Eric.
Based on the early description makes me think of a civilization type of game, like Through the Ages or Imperial Settlers.
Mm-hmm.
But based on the mechanics, I don't get that feeling. So I'm interested to see, like, how is a civilization game that is different going to play? That box art is real boring.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just saw the box, I wouldn't even probably glance at it. It wouldn't even get my attention. But
yeah,
based on the description, I'm interested in the mechanics. And then I've heard good things about it. I picked it, so I would pick it off a shelf, but man, only because I heard about it ahead of time. If I just saw that box, I wouldn't notice.
Yeah. No, same thing as Eric. If I hadn't heard about it before, I probably wouldn't pick it up. I think Kellen, Red Tank, right? From Board Game Barrage.
Yes.
This is one of his favorite games.
It is his number one game.
Yeah, number one game. So... What I think is interesting is, so Carl, this is a spiritual successor to a game called Glory to Rome, which Carl Chudiak also designed. The crazy part is Glory to Rome, like, you should look it up. It was this whole thing. There's an article about how the guy ran the Kickstarter for it. I think the guy's name was Ed Carter, and he ended up losing a house because of the Kickstarter he ran for Glory to Rome. And Glory to Rome now is like this grail game that if you find original copies of it, they can go for $300+. And oh, it's literally just a card game. Just a card game.
How do you lose a house over a Kickstarter?
So from what I read,
he promised too many stretch goals.
No, it wasn't even stretch goals. It was like he offered free shipping. Ooh. And that was the big thing. But then, so it was like this whole, it was like a series of things. So it was like the first thing that happened was, is he was working with a Chinese printer and he didn't speak Chinese, but he was dating someone who was speaking Chinese, but then they broke up. So he had no Chinese translator. And then when he finally got copies, he didn't put like no step on the boxes. So they were stacking pallets of this game and they got crushed. So then that added to it.
And
then
he lost a bunch of them.
And then, he lost a bunch of them. And then, you know, he was shipping 100 copies of them because everything was coming to him. So then he was shipping 100 copies to Australia, which, you know, the one person from New Zealand that keeps downloading our episodes, please keep doing that. But, you know, you're the one person who knows how expensive it is to ship to Australia, New Zealand. So he lost a ton of money there.
The game.
Yeah. And then on top of that, he also, he was like a contractor with, I think it was like Staples or somebody, Office Depot, and he lost his job.
Oh, jeez.
So that like, so he's going through and he offered free shipping. So it was like this whole crazy thing. So now
does this guy have a GoFundMe? I feel like I should give him some money.
Yeah, I don't know. Like the article I read was like at the end, it was just like, yeah, you know, I would run another Kickstarter. And I was like, why would you run another Kickstarter? Like,
well, he's learned some lessons for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, from what I read, like, I think the house that he lost was like one that he had because he was living in like Amsterdam or something during this whole thing. And the house he had in the States is the one he lost. And it was for when he was coming over to do, when he had to do things with the company he contracted with. So that's the house he lost. So like, I don't feel super bad, but I would pick it up just based on like knowing that kind of backstory and being super curious. And then Kellen making it as number one. I'm interested.
Now, the reason I had originally said this was a two player game is because he always says it's a two player game. So I think it's his favorite at two players and it's, well, some consider it less good, but still very good at three players. So we'll see.
How do you think it's going to play though?
So it's a civilization game. So you're going to start, there's going to be like a card that's like, you're in the Stone Age, right? Or maybe it's okay. So it's a deck. So you have like your deck of cards that you draw from is going to be in like, you know, what am I thinking of? Call to Adventure, where you have like era one, era two, era three, era four. So as you go through them, you'll advance to the eras by like, you know, that going through the deck.
I mean, it does say variable phase order, so that would make sense for that. I mean, it's a card game with hand management, so you've got to be drawing. So maybe there's like some randomness to then like the technology that you get for your civilization.
Yeah, so like I would draw like democracy and you're going to draw gunpowder and we're going to have a gunpowder democracy fight. Like Guy Fox.
Gunpowder might win. I don't know.
I often fight people with my democracy.
I mean,
take this democratic bullet to the face.
I was gonna say it's very un-American, you anti-democracy person. But then I was like, well, gunpowder's pretty American. So
yeah, right.
All right. So what are we melding and splaying?
Melding and splaying. Well, we're gonna have to put cards down and overlap them then.
So maybe like our cards are going to have like one side is democracy.
Wait. What if since it's melding and splaying, like it's almost like when you're building a ship and you're trying to build a technology.
Okay. So each card is going to have pieces of a technology.
Yeah.
And you've got to like meld and splay them together, your cards together until you
form so you might have a piece of gunpowder and a piece of democracy and just meld them together. Gunpowder democracy. Guy Fox.
Oh, that would be incredibly cool.
I feel like, isn't that the United States? Gunpowder democracy?
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
So you got to meld your cards into a combo. You're comboing.
Yeah. Oh, right. A combo innovation. I like it. How'd we do, Kiwi? Well,
shit, we got it, man. If this isn't the game, it should be.
Right.
Yeah, no, let's go. Let's just get right into it.
History of everything, BP.
I know.
Give me some of that prehistory history.
History of humanity.
That whole term, though, prehistory. Like, how is there prehistory? It's therefore when people place an emphasis on the written source as history and nothing else, which, of course, is one of my soapboxes. But, like, at first I was like, maybe I would ask you guys one of your favorite innovations were and, like, do a deep dive. But when it brought up the wheel, I was like, I love talking about the wheel. So, like, the wheel that, like, so when I teach, like, the ancient stuff and we get to, you know, the rise of Mesopotamia and by, like, 3000 BCE, there's evidence of the wheel and wheel with copper nails holding it together. And, like, my students just kind of look at me and they're like, yeah, duh, the wheel. I'm like, no, you guys, like, this revolutionizes how economies can grow. One article I was reading through really briefly, like, talked about the wheel. And then especially, like, because some of the evidence we have is from chariots. And so that would definitely revolutionize warfare, which, again, thinking of Mesopotamia and chariots and actually horses and where they came from and when they were also developed and how all of that mingles, talks about all of these exchanges that were taking place. Because all of the innovations, like I had thought of, like many of them really come about from cultural exchanges between different places. Many of them are then developed in new ways for warfare. There's some theories out there that talk about innovations as really coming from like the desire to beat your enemy. And I mean, I guess to a certain extent, you could see that in the development of chariots off of the wheel. But how I present it to my students, because I'm more that social cultural historian, is I just think about like, okay, how do you think people traded before the development of the wheel? Like, what would you have to do? Because for instance, like in the Americas, people are always like, oh, well, they didn't have the wheel. Well, they didn't have developed carts because they didn't have beast of burdens to pull those developed carts, but they actually have unearthed toys that had perfect wheels attached to them. So it's not that even the peoples in America who, right, were really separated from peoples of the Eastern Hemisphere didn't develop a wheel. They just didn't have, you know, once they'd killed off all the mammoths and the horses,
they didn't have any beasts of burden?
No. If you think about the Americas before the interactions between the Eastern and Western Hemispheres, the only beasts that they had that could even be domesticated were like the turkey, the guinea pig, and the llama alpaca. I throw them together. I know there's a distinction, but I always just throw them together. That's it.
Alpacas are cuter. I'm kind of picturing it. One, I pictured a chariot being pulled by turkeys, and then I pictured a chariot being pulled by jaguars, and that would have really changed a lot.
I mean, isn't that like Freya's almost? Doesn't she have a chariot pulled by wild cats?
Oh, I think you said turkeys. I was like, whoa.
But anyway, so the wheel, I just feel like that, like, it's just so exciting when you start to think about it. And like, so when we, and then for instance, when I, you know, you think about the economic values that then you can now like attach a wheel to a box. What do you have? They're like, a cart. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, how much more stuff can you put on a cart versus your back? And they're like, tons. And I'm like, now here you go. Boom, economy. And what China did early on with the first emperor, Shi Huangdi, it always gets a little caught in my mouth. He standardized wheel carts, the wheels of carts. So I always say cartwheels, but then I think of cartwheels. And I feel like I brought this up once before. But by standardizing the size of the wheels of carts, now you can integrate, again, like a diverse area and have commerce moving even more. So boom, the wheel. How does the wheel fit into the rules and how close were we to guessing this game?
Well, let's find out.
Okay.
All right. So there are two primary ways to win this game. The first is to have the most points after the final technology age finishes. So at the end of the world. The second way is to attain a set number of achievements, which is based off player count. So for us, it'll be 5. Each player is going to build their civilization in front of them, which consists of their board, which has their current innovations, points, and achievements. Each card in the game is unique. So there are 105, I think is the number, 105 unique cards. They all contain different actions, icons within five different categories, and those categories are represented by color. So each card represents a technology or an idea from 10 ages throughout history. And we're just going to continue saying prehistory because that's what's on the card. So you got prehistory, classical, medieval, renaissance, exploration, enlightenment, romance, modern, postmodern, and information.
Ooh.
So at the beginning of the game, every player is going to draw two cards from age one, which is prehistory, and they're going to select one and reveal them simultaneously. And that's going to start your player board. And then whoever chose the card that's closest to A in alphabetical order, so the title of the card, that's going to be the first player. So normally players are going to be allowed two actions. They're going to be able to conduct two actions, and there are four possible actions. For the very first turn, for the first player, they are only going to be allowed to do one of those actions, and then two for every turn after that. So your four actions that you can choose from, you can draw. So you can add a card from the supply to your hand. So you're going to draw a card from the age that matches the highest age on your player board. So if you have age two, you can draw age two cards. If that deck is gone, then you can go up to the next age. So that's where the variable phase order comes in, because I could draw a age three card, but maybe Eric hasn't gotten to age three yet. And one of the ways the game can end is if somebody has to draw a card from age 10, but there are no more cards in age 10 and the game ends immediately. All right, so that's action one. Action two is you can meld a card. So you can take a card from your hand and play it to your board. So I'll complain about it later, but yeah, so meld. You take a card from your hand and play it to the board. If it matches a card that you already have played, you're going to place it on top of that card. So you're going to basically replace it. But the card that you played is going to stay on the board. You can dogma, which apparently is a noun or a verb.
Interesting. So
you're going to activate one of the top cards on your board for its ability effects.
You do know I now have Ben Affleck in my head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a great movie. So this is basically the core mechanic of the game is doing dogma. So you're going to choose one of the top cards and activate it, and each effect will have a small version of one of the six icons. So what's going to happen is say the icon is the castle. So everyone on the board is going to count up how many castle icons they are currently showing. And if you have the same number or more than the player activating, you get to do the action as well. If you have less, you can't. Some of the actions will say, I demand, and those are attack actions. So in that case, if the person has the same or more icons than you, they can't be attacked by that action. So you're only going to attack people who have less than that. And if you can't perform part of an effect, you can do as much as you can and then ignore the rest. And you're allowed to perform this action if the card selected would cause nothing to happen. Also, if people can join in on the action, you will end up doing the action last. So everyone else is going to perform the action clockwise around the table, and then it'll come back to you, and then you will get to do the action. And then finally, you can achieve. So it lets you claim an achievement. So you have to satisfy two requirements to perform this action and claim an achievement. You must have a score that is five times the value of the age on the achievement. So the example that they give in the rule book is for age one, you need at least 5 points. You're going to earn points by performing dogmas, and those dogmas will give you points. You must also have a top card of that age on the board. So in order to claim, say, age three, you will need 15 points and you'll need at least an age three card on your board. And then the game is going to trigger or going to continue in this manner until the end is triggered and play stops immediately. And like I said, the two ways that it can be triggered is if someone gains their fifth achievement for us in a three-player game, or the age 10 supply is empty and someone is supposed to draw from it. And that's it. That's the whole game.
Let's play.
We just finished a game of innovation. To recap, BP was an underachiever with...
wow.
BP was a no achiever with no achievements.
Yeah. Kiwi, I mean, that's still underachieving.
Ouch.
That is true.
Can we just say I got zero achievements?
Okay. BP never achieved anything.
Oh my God. Okay, I'm letting you go. Let it go. Mm.
Kiwi had one achievement and I won with five achievements. Strategy.
Eric stole people's points. That was this damn strategy. So,
yeah, piracy was a really strong strategy for a while there. Yeah, I had the pirate code.
Barely have any cards out on your board.
I did terrible. I guess. I don't know. I guess it was my strategy. So first of all, I didn't have any cards that let me splay or do any of the fancy stuff everyone else was doing. I had like three that just said return cards and get points for it. So I did those, and so I had a lot of score cards, and then I got the piracy one, which let me take all yours, which is really fun. So I took all your score cards.
But I feel like that would have only applied to Kiwi, because I had, like, no score cards.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had some low ones, so he took all the low ones. Yeah.
I'd only gotten those from him, though, so...
So that was kind of it. And then I had very few cards. I had, like, nothing splayed. I didn't really have any symbols, so then I just kept... Like, I couldn't compete with you guys, so I just kept drawing cards and doing the tournament for points thing and had a bunch of points. And then I took the achievements, and I guess that made me win.
Well, my next turn around, I was going to be able to take your piracy card.
Oh, fancy. Oh,
that and then I was good. Just going to then I was just going to do it back to you and get all my points back that you stole.
Right. Yeah, that would have taken a while, though.
So
would have been a lot of.
Is it that the strategy is there was one card that may have been OP?
No, I don't think it was piracy. I only got 5 points out of that. Most of my points came from returning my cards and getting points for them. I mean, I have a lot of scorecards.
I still, by the way, don't know how you scored achievement points. So, yeah.
So it's an action and you had to meet two requirements. One requirement is you had to have a top card on your board equal to or above the age you were trying to claim.
So you had to be in the and age then you at had least.
And then you had to have points 5 times the age. So like in order to claim age 7, you would have to have a seven age card on your top board, and you would have to have at least 35 points.
Yeah. If you didn't want to do the math, it's on the card. You just
that little circle on the card. Yeah.
So that's all I was doing is I got 10 points. I took that card. I got 15. I took this one and that's all I did.
And that's, it's an action.
So, like, I wasn't doing any of the splaying or any of the, I couldn't really do the demand stuff because I didn't have it. So I was just drew a card, turned it in, got points for it. And then I got a bunch of points and took the achievements, and that's all I did. So.
Yeah. And so I think that's kind of people's complaints about this game and Glory to Rome, which has a very similar features, is like some of the cards play off very well to others, but only you can get that card because every card in the game is unique.
Right.
So like if you get those cards, you could end up having like a very powerful engine going.
I mean, I don't.
Whereas other people don't.
I mean, I was like half the game. I was like, man, everybody's look at all your cards. Look at all the splaying you've done. Look at all your symbols. And I'm like, I got nothing. So let's talk about the theme. We'll go with BP since she's the historian. Did it feel like you were building a civilization through the ages?
No. Like every once in a while, like I think we'd hit one and we'd be like really stoked about what it was kind of thematic wise, like the piracy, or I think I immediately played like alchemy and feudalism and I was like stoked about those. But other than that, like you were trying to game it more than I feel like build an actual civilization. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes. I'm with you. Like, yeah, like some of the cards are cool and the topics are like, oh, this is cool, but you don't really do anything with it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, clothing doesn't feel like I'm doing something clothing related. A pirate is probably the closest one.
Yeah, the pirate is definitely the closest one.
Like I have vaccine, and vaccine is also another one that returns card. Like it doesn't really play out thematically.
No, I was going to say, I 100% agree. I think at the very beginning, we kind of talked about, like, I had the dog that used tools to build a boat with oars.
Right.
And then after that, like, we didn't do that anymore. Cause I think at that point we weren't even looking at the name, except for we'd read the name. And then you guys played cards that were like, oh, feudalism, have to play that. Piracy, have to play that. I didn't even like read the title of the cards. Sometimes I would just look at the action cause it didn't matter. I would just look at whatever action it did and the icons, and then I would play it based on that.
And then the weird thing with thematically, like the whole meld and dogma, I don't know if that was supposed to play into the theme, but I don't know why it isn't just play and action.
Yeah.
It didn't really feel thematic to me to use those terms.
Yeah, yeah. And skipping to rules real quick, like that was the most frustrating part of that rule book. Is
like weird.
Pretty sure dogma isn't a verb, you know?
I thought you were saying it. I'm gonna dogma, and I thought, I don't think that's right.
Yeah, like why are you gonna take like words that mean other things and use them as like your action? Like just call it play and call it.
It'd be one thing, maybe instead of play, you wanted to say like develop or invent. Invent doesn't really apply to more of the theology ones.
Yeah.
At least that would be thematic, though.
Yeah. Develop, I feel like, might be.
Yeah. I mean, even play and perform would have been better. Like, they match more to what you're doing. It was just confusing, and I absolutely hated it.
Yeah, it's unnecessary. Yes. Okay, how about the art? Anyone?
Is there art?
What art?
There's our response to that.
Arts of iconography, I guess.
The graphic design.
The cute dog.
Is graphic design art? Then that's what we need to design.
Yes, graphic design is art.
Okay, well, I feel like it's more graphic design than art.
It is. There's no illustrative art on this. I guess the back of the
card. I mean, the symbols are clear. But yeah, there's just it's not a game that's playing into there. Like, would that have added to it? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
There's no room for art because there's so much stuff on the cards.
I mean, they certainly saved on making the game by not having art. They probably could just pay a graphic designer to make all the cards.
Snap.
I mean, yeah, that is true, and not every game necessarily need. I'm thinking, Galactic, it reminds me of Galactic Scoundrels.
I love
didn't have
Galactic
much art.
Scoundrels, though. That was, I mean, but that game is good because, yeah, it tells a story.
Yeah, we decided you don't really need a lot of art because you're developing your own story. And it kind of helps facilitate that by letting you kind of play.
Yeah, the art would have taken away from your ability to tell stories. Like, they intentionally had crappy art, one, to avoid any kind of lawsuits.
It wasn't crappy art. It was just basic. It's similar to this, where it was just the graphic design elements to it. I think in some games it makes sense and it can work. In this game, I don't know where you would put the art. There's a lot going on these cards. Mechanics, Kiwi.
I don't even know where to go with it.
I can start with this one. I think it definitely did some creative stuff. I think in like the whole sort of the card deck being a circular thing, and then you draw from it, and then you can draw up the deck or you can replace cards towards the lower end of the deck. I think that is an interesting sort of element in going back and forth sort of between things.
I also liked that if other players had the same type of icon more than you, they also got to participate.
Yeah.
So it really made you think about like, okay, if I do this action, that means other people get to do this action. And I don't want Eric to do this action. So I'm going to do something else. So it creates more thought behind what you're going to do because there's the potential that other people could benefit from it as well.
Right. And
I like that there were attack cards as well that you could then stop by having more or less icons.
It's like my piracy, you eventually got enough crowns that I couldn't do it anymore.
Well, it was that. And also you had stolen all of our scorecards that were four or less. So
there are some other ones like that where it was like, oh, this was prevent. I tried to do this dogma, but it was prevented because you now have too many icons. So, yeah, it did let you kind of defend yourself if you drew well. And then the whole sort of deciding what card to put on the top and then you know, the whole splaying thing. It added a cool element of there's a lot of things going on and a lot of decisions to make. And I maybe that my reason that my board got so light may have been because I decided to not replace some cards early on that I just should have done. I think that is, it had a lot of creative elements, and I do think they worked well together.
I still don't know. I feel like how things were supposed to be played out. Like, even though there was all this decision making and all these opportunities, like, I feel like I was going like one direction and that was not apparently the correct direction. So, yeah, there were a lot of options. I don't know.
Yeah. So rules, wording on cards, BP, there's a lot of it.
There is. And many times Kiwi will interpret this for us. I think a lot of that just has to do is like, maybe when you play it a few times, like you understand a lot more, but like a lot of it was just like, not really sure what this means. Like who gets to go first? Like, I'm just going to play this and see what happens. But that was me. So.
But it's another one where I feel like the base game isn't that complex. It's just when you add in all the reading and things.
Right. All the layers.
And the fact that every card is unique.
Yeah.
Every card is unique. And it's a game where you have to worry about what everyone else's cards are doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you don't just have to look at your cards and know what they're doing. You got to know kind of everyone's cards. And then so it just becomes a lot of information to take in. Kiwi, rulebook.
So the rulebook is pretty short. The one thing I'll say is like, even though we had to like, I had to sit down and read the card, I never had to go to the internet to get an explanation of the card.
That's cool.
Like based on reading the rules and then reading the bit on the card, I was able to interpret what we were supposed to do.
Right.
And I don't think we messed any of that up. The only stuff that I had to look up was things that had I read the rules or had I, instead of playing video games this morning, reviewed them, maybe I wouldn't have had to have looked them up. So I will say that about the rules. Like I agree with Eric. I think the rules in general are easy. The complexity comes with the fact that every card is unique and there's no way to know what order you're going to draw things and how all of your things are going to interact. And that will change every game.
It's you can't really have a plan. And you say so when you draw a card, you don't go, oh, this is part of my plan. You've got to read it three times to understand it.
Yes.
And then figure out your whole new plan. And when your first action is to draw, because this happened a lot where somebody drew a card and then it was silence for like a minute. And so we're like, are you done over there? Like, no, I just reading all my stuff.
Yeah.
It's like every time you draw a card, you've got to like reevaluate your entire game.
Yeah.
Which in the physical game, they do have a first and second action so that as you do your first action, you pass it to the next player.
Oh.
And the next player knows it's their turn when they get the second action. It's just in Tabletop Simulator.
I don't believe anybody actually does that in life.
Yeah, probably
no
not.
There's no way you're passing those things around.
But that's a way to mitigate it. And it's just in Tabletop Simulator that it's hard to.
Right. Well, I think just in general, you would see that. Somebody reading a card and know what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's and just then, the remote play aspect. But
yeah.
Going back to what I said, though, there were a handful of cards I drew and I was like, there's too many words. I don't even want to I think I want to do what I think I want to know that I am doing. That was worded all fuckery.
Yeah.
Like I have a plan and I want to stick to it and I don't even want to read this card and reevaluate my plan. So okay. I'm just going to turn it in for points. So I had a lot of cards that I did that with.
Yeah. And I already voiced my one thing that I hate about the rules and it's the melding and dogma. Like they should have called it something. I don't hate those things. I hate the phrases that they use to describe them. And I think I watched Rado play it and he even made the comment like, I didn't know you could dogma something. Like I didn't know that was a verb.
That's a very,
so like
weird
he made the same comment.
Choice.
It's very weird. And I think that adds to confusion. And in the rule book, there's even like a page that is, hey, here's how to teach innovation. And it's very small and it goes through like different ways to try and teach the game.
That's kind of cool
because it already knows like, right here, very first sentence on teaching innovation. Teaching the game to new players can be daunting.
Player interaction, it's pretty direct. There's a lot of, I demand actions are pretty direct.
But even the not I demand.
Yeah. Everyone's taking actions based on the number of things. So you've got to keep an eye on everyone's board. You got to know what their actions are. You've got to know what their symbol counts are. Yeah. So, I mean, there's, I think it's pretty direct player interaction of trying to pay attention to what everyone's doing and what you're going to do based on what they've got. Was it fun player interaction?
No.
What do you think?
I don't know. I didn't have the pirate card. I feel like it would have been different if I had the pirate card and I could have stole more points.
I mean, it's interesting. I just feel like we played games that I had more fun with the player interaction. And I don't really have a good way to describe that because I haven't thought about it before. I think it's because you're not like maybe it's types of we could really kind of break down the types of player interaction of like more of deduction and trying to figure out what people are thinking. Fugitive or Sheriff of Nottingham or, you know, those ones where you're trying to like figure out what people are thinking. And that's the interaction versus this. I was playing more to your cards. I was counting your cards and looking at your cards' actions. I wasn't really trying to figure out what you were thinking. I was just looking at what you had on your table. Would you play it again? We'll start with BP.
I think you know the answer, hence your laugh. The answer is no. I don't think I ever got it. I don't know that I would admit it was too complicated for me. I think I am the person on this podcast that tries to keep things like more like non-gamer play style. And I just feel like it is not one of those ones that like non-gamers would play. Like, did it feel like building a civilization? Not really. Did it feel like you needed to understand? Like, I mean, I just feel like there was a lot more to it than I was willing to put in it for what it provided me in pleasure, if that makes sense. So, and I feel like there would be a lot of people in the same boat as me with that.
This is another one where like, I get the people that really enjoy it, why they enjoy it. Cause they can see all the pieces and like, especially if you kind of like to me, the most appealing part was kind of the chaotic nature of it where like you drew and you had to, you know, re-decide, but there was too much information for me to really enjoy it versus other chaotic games I like. So I wouldn't think I'd play it again. I also, again, we tend to like more thematic, more story kind of things. And this is the exact opposite of that. So I wouldn't play it again, but I get the people that enjoy it. And for it's just too much reading. Like I felt like the whole game, we're like the pauses for readings were so many, like it kind of destroys the flow of the game. And I'd rather just be playing than reading the cards, which makes me sound like I don't like to read things, but you know, like when you're in the middle of a game, like stopping to take a break, to read a card four times, to try to figure out what it's doing is just very, I don't know. It kind of kills the game for me.
I would play it again.
Yeah.
And that's why I had you guys go first. Cause I knew both of you guys would say no.
I don't know. I'm very borderline with this one. Cause I can see why it's enjoyable. And I think more plays.
Yeah, I just like the idea that to me, it felt like a puzzle of trying to how best to like make my board good compared to everybody else and not knowing what pieces were going to come up in order to make my board better. I liked that puzzle aspect to it. I wasn't really worried about the lack of art or the lack of theme for whatever reason, because normally, you know, there is a level of enjoyment that you get for, you know, a good thematic game. I definitely would play it again. I don't think this would be a game, you know, because this is a card game that could go in the quiver. But I think the other part about games going in the quiver is you would need to know that there would be people to play with. And right. There are other games in the quiver that I would much rather pull out and teach people. One, because they're easier to teach. Two, they're generally thematic and are relatively easy to pick up. And three, I feel like this game is probably just a little too complex for the types of games that I would want in the quiver.
I think quiver games are more lightweight games and this is not a lightweight game.
But this would be a game that if someone was like, hey, let's play Innovation, I don't think I would hesitate. I would say, okay.
All right. That is Innovation.
So if you have any recommendations or if you have any stories you want to share about games you've been playing during what may have passed by the time this comes out, but which while we're in the middle of playing it is a unique time period. I don't know, just any games you want to hear our thoughts on or want to send our way as recommendations for us to play or that you have played and like and just want to share your general comments with us. We would love to hear from you is the basic gist of all of that. So hit us up at firstturntabletop@gmail.com or Twitter and Instagram at firstturncast. And the podcasting camel, I don't know if I can get, I feel like I've had some good ones in the past. Let's see. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers.
Hey,
we look forward. Hey, I'm not done. We look forward to hearing from you and play more games.
Ooh, yes, I don't even know it. I'm not reading it. I'm playing it. The Pirate Code.
Play a card. I'm not going to use the word mailed.
Mailed.
I mailed this card to the table.
She's been in Virginia too long.
I hate you guys.
I've been watching The Tiger King on Netflix.